Sam Bell reporting to Central.
Everything running smoothly.
Over and out. Rock and roll. God bless America.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Underrated Movie Podcast. This is a podcast where we discuss films that are underrated, underappreciated, and ones that have slipped under the radar and passed most people by. I am your host, Derek McDuff, and joining me today is my guest co-host, Mr. David Holloway. How's it going, David?
Oh, it's going great. D-Rock, how are you tonight?
That might be the first time anybody's called me that on mic, so I'll take it. Oh, man. David is a good friend from real life that I've decided to bring on to be my co-host because he is very knowledgeable about film and we have many good conversations about film. And the film that he chose today is definitely one in the slipped under the radar category. And that is Moon, which is the 2009 directorial debut of Duncan Jones starring Sam Rockwell. And I never do this, but I'm gonna start by saying, if you've seen a trailer for Moon or you know about Moon, whatever, just keep listening. But if you don't know anything about this movie, if you're going into this podcast sight unseen, pause it and go watch Moon, because if you don't know what this movie is about, there is nothing quite like going into it cold. Yes. I'll just say that. Yeah,
100%.
But so yeah, I guess just to start off here, David, how did you approach this movie? Did you know what was happening going into it? Did you see a trailer or did you go into it cold?
I went into it cold, saw it the year it came out, loved it. It's my quick take. It's the kind of personal sci-fi you don't get to appreciate. this came out in a year where Transformers Revenge of the Fallen was one of the top box office grossing films. So you can see the spectrum of sci-fi. The Star Trek reboot came out that year, Avatar, crazy huge movies came out, and this one was just quietly doing a very personal story.
Yeah, it's interesting they point that out, because 2009 is kind of in my opinion a great year of sci-fi. There was, some, not all those movies are great, but some of them I think are pretty good, particularly the Star Trek reboot. But then there's also, there was the big ones, but then there was also a lot of smaller personal things like this. And then I would say also District 9, which were both these smaller films from these guys who are now they're known directors, but they were greenhorns. This was their first features that either of these guys had done.
District 9, though, I think got more pop culture momentum, right? It did a lot better at the box office, for instance, had a lot more eyes, and it's the more type of sci-fi that is accessible to people, because it was more action oriented, whereas Moon is not that.
No, not at all. I'd say the beginning it's a lot more slow and personal, then it kind of becomes more conventional sci-fi towards the end.
Becomes more thrilling towards the end.
There's gunfights and all that stuff happening, and explosions and all that good stuff that we love to see. This one is a lot more low key. It's almost like got vibes of Castaway at certain points, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yes. This is definitely a movie about, there's definitely some introspection, because when do we start spoiling things?
Yeah. I'd say let's go ahead and start spoiling things now.
Okay. The big one.
The big
one. Do we do the
yes.
big one?
Yes. Go for it.
Okay. So Sam Rockwell is playing a guy named Sam who is working on the moon as essentially kind of his automated mining facility that he oversees, is just kind of one man doing the job. And you get this picture of him as a guy who's, a real blue collar Joe up on the moon, working off a contract, just itching to get home back to his lady. And it turns out he's a clone. Boom. Yeah. Clones. Did you know those were a thing? Yeah, you didn't. And they're on short lifespans. Mm-hmm. And then they're plop back out and and starting their cycle of 3 years all over again. And it is just this wonderfully paced, because you do start out, like, to your point, there is sort of a Castaway vibe because he has an industrial accident occur. And for all intents and purposes, this automated facility thinks he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And we pop out a new Sam, who then has to interact with this other Sam, who is deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
And hash out, you know, what it means to exist. I mean, it's kind of a big question these clones are dealing with is,
mm-hmm,
who are they really? What is real? What do their lives even matter? You know, there's a lot of great ways to interpret it. But before I just start rambling on about why I love this movie, it does a really great job of using a minimal budget to tell a very personal story about big concepts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
a fantastic score.
I had that in my notes. The Clint Mansell score
it's so
phenomenal.
Good. Yeah. So good. It hits those tones of both the absence of life around you, the big empty that is space, and how inhospitable the world is that he lives in. But it has these great, it has this great pacing, you know, that because there is a ticking clock in the background. Yes. Sam One is dying. He's got a timer on his life, and regardless of his incident, he was going to die. And now they have to work out the fact that they're both clones. Neither one of them is real. None of their memories are real. And now there's a ticking clock of like, well, you're going to die. What do we do? And what's going to happen when the powers that be realize that we now know that we're real. Yeah. And that we're clones and we're being used like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not like they're androids, right? They're not,
mm-hmm, Blade Runner. Yeah,
yeah, they're not a simulacrum of life, mm-hmm, that we have to grapple with what is real in that way. They are flesh and blood.
Mm-hmm.
They have pain and emotional pain and their
memories of, like, not their memories necessarily, but like someone's actual life that they lived in, the connection and people they want to get back to.
Exactly. So they're filled with all the same kind of drives and emotional touchstones that real people have. And, you know, it's a tough thing to grapple about when essentially what you're dealing with is people who have been abandoned by society in full to the point where people don't even know that they're out there. This is when human lives are the cheapest thing you can use as a tool. You know what I mean? It's like this crazy. Given my political philosophies, I definitely see this as a great critique of capitalism, you know, but mm-hmm, you can step away from those kind of things and just see it as a really, really beautiful story about someone grappling with their existence and making their life meaningful in its own right, as opposed to service to an outside power.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is all completely spot on, all very well said. One of the things that you brought up that I kind of wanted to circle back to real fast is I love the way that this movie uses kind of the language of cinema to trick us if you don't know what's going on in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
When Sam, you know, Sam One gets, you know, he has that crash and then he's getting woke up and Gertie is like, who, by the way, I love the design of, it's just like this hanging robot with just emojis on it. I think that's such a cool, just that's, it fits in with the whole, it's not quite retro sci-fi, but it's very like, we're not trying to make it look like it's a crazy future or anything. It's just like, yeah, this is just like an industrial plant, you know, it's just like very like alien, you know.
Exactly, that's what I was about to say is it nails that aesthetic of what being a working class spacer is going to be like for a lot of people. It's not Star Trek. There are people covered in filth and blood and sweat doing necessary work that we all take for granted. And that's the aesthetic you love, is that you are presented with the kind of stark beauty of the moon and the aesthetic of a moon base that is fueled by one person, you know, keeps it tidy and clean and professional looking, and watching that deteriorate alongside the deterioration of Sam One. And the filth and the hair and the wounds, and I mean, when we say he's deteriorating, he is like looking more sallow over time. He's getting weaker,
vomiting blood,
needing the support of the other clone more and more, which is also this can be a real. Can I curse? I can't remember if I can curse.
Yes, curse all you want.
I curse all the time.
All goddamn day.
It is a mind fuck because, you know, imagine that the only one who can help you is you, who is also going to die relatively soon. Mm-hmm. And you're both depressed under the same system. Mm-hmm. And
he watches that videotape of the old previous versions of himself just like falling apart, then just getting like incinerated.
Yeah. And they just keep him in this isolation loop of comms are down. Here's these videos of your essentially fake family, your wife, that and his only companion, Gertie, voiced by
no one. Like, I don't think anyone has that part. I think Christopher Plummer re-recorded. I'm just kidding.
Okay, I didn't know how we were going to handle talking about it.
That part hits a little differently now. You're like, oh, cool, Gertie, voiced by beloved character actor Kevin Spacey. And now it's like, cool.
Yes, Academy Award winner.
We just got to get Christopher Plummer to redo all of his parts like they did in that one movie. And this would be an easy one because he would just have to record it.
Why not? Just do the Disney treatment for everything, which is, if it's problematic, pretend it never existed.
Exactly. Song of the South doesn't exist.
I don't even know what you're talking about. So it's just so that's really what resonated with me, is that you don't get a lot of sci-fi like that anymore. And, you know, it's in that same vein of movies like Solaris. You know, very quiet. The pacing is all about like, how are people dealing with not supernatural, but like preternatural situations. Like, none of us have had to question our existence to the point where you're like, oh, I'm only a clone that's bred for 3 years and the real me was some guy. And it has a lot of great touchstones. Like, we talked about the aesthetics being a callback to, like, you know, those like Alien, you know, movies that had this heart of the working man in a futuristic setting. So it's all kind of very, it gives it such a realness that a lot of sci-fi misses out on, because it just becomes at some point fanciful. And then you have to deal with the kind of problems and existential crises that lie at the heart of good science fiction, is our new paradigm. How does it make us question who we are as human beings? And what does it mean to be human anymore? And I mean, to your point, you know, District 9, a great, great movie that at its heart was talking about what it means to be human or to be accepted or how we treat others. Obviously, it's a very well known analogy for apartheid South Africa. But beyond that, all those issues are reminiscent of something humanity struggles with constantly, which is recognizing that we're all human beings and trying and not finding artificial divides between us. And good sci-fi says, what are these present day problems, and just throws them into a unique setting. And what it does really well is it anchors it, right? It doesn't look to do like the Star Trek thing, which is, you know, how do we deal with these social problems, but with these crazy aliens, and like nothing has to make sense because it is just a metaphor. It is just mythology, essentially. It's a new fable. This was, you know, it's super grounded because the problem is presented in a working man's life, and the powers that oversee him is a corporation. So it's dealing with questions of like the power corporations have, how they go unchecked, how we treat human life in in pursuit of earnings and profit. Because at the end of the day, you have to come away from this and be like, well, that's cruelty. What they are doing to these clones is cruelty. they give them absolutely. A fake life and then make them experience death ad infinitum for as long as they can get away from it or get mm-hmm. get away with it. And an interesting touchstone to it is that Duncan Jones has another great movie that I really love that came out on Netflix called Mute.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if this was going to come up. Yeah. And
it's a great thing that's happening in the background on a lot of TVs is you see the Sams are mm-hmm. like testifying in front of Congress, and you get to learn through Mute that the Sams succeeded in their mission, which mm-hmm. was blowing this whole thing apart and getting the truth out there.
Yeah. I love that the way this ends with that, you know, because apparently there was originally a different ending where you see Sam meeting the president and stuff like that. But I do think it works a little better just kind of without that little ending. It's just him kind of hopefully going up. You see the first Sam like looking up like he couldn't make it, but he was able to help the next Sam get there. And it's like you said, the whole thing about, you know, understanding why we are human. You have that like kind of like Fox News voice in the background being like, it's either he's a crackpot or he's an illegal immigrant, you know, which mm-hmm. I think was like a pretty, you know, nice touch and really validates everything you were saying. But I think with all of that, that just shows how well paced this movie is. It just kind of the way it doles out information. Nothing ever feels like rushed. So many, a lot of sci-fi films that are of a bigger budget feel like they need to be rushed and giving you all the info and stuff like that. And this one, it's almost like a mystery at the beginning, kind of something I was hinting at earlier, where yes. and the way that they use specific film language, the way we have trained ourselves to understand story from 100+ years of watching movies, we're like, okay, like we saw the rover crash and then we see Sam getting woken up by Gertie and we're like, doesn't really make sense. Like who would have got him? But okay, whatever, somehow he got him. And then we kind of like forget about that. And then he goes, like, there's like 10 minutes where he's like trying to get out and he eventually goes out. And then you're like, wait, that's the rover. What's happening right now? He's looking at, oh my God, is that? And then that's when the premise of the movie really gets kicking into motion. And you're like, oh my gosh, there he is. He's looking at himself. And so who's a clone? Are we a clone? Because there's never like one moment when someone's like, ah, I've realized it all. You know, at first they both are kind of denying their clones, but they slowly start to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that having the interplay between the two Sams does something really cool where it kind of brings up a lot of the nature of identity. You know, you touch on like, what does it mean to be human? And I think beyond that too, because that's all certainly there, but it kind of brings up, what does it mean to be you as distinct from anyone else? If you've lived a very similar life or an identical life with someone else, how do you distinguish yourself? Or if he's the same person just 3 years later. And I love they bring up all the stuff of, like, he's clearly, Sam too, is a very angry person. And I love that you get the bits of, like, he's, the reason he kind of took this initial mission is because his wife kind of probably encouraged him because he maybe needed to get some alone time, maybe needed to go and chill out on the moon with his thoughts because he has these anger problems, all these issues. And then this other Sam has been working on his like model town for 3 years. He's been hanging out with the robot for 3 years. He's been just kind of, you know, and it's a little bit differently after we've all been through COVID and, you know, done however long lockdown and all that stuff. Like it gives you that new perspective. And it's interesting to see, oh, this is the same guy at two different points in his life interacting with himself. And is he the same person? Is he a different person now mm-hmm. than he was 3 years ago? Can you like atone and get back to the life that you had because you've made mistakes? I really love how it touches on all those and it kind of asks all these big questions. But since it is such an isolated story, it's just the two of them. You don't get to see them, like, what happened with real Sam. I know you get, like, a hint of it in Mute, but that's just to kind of, like, tie off the bow. You don't really it's not saying like, well, yes, this is, it's giving you a lot of things to think about, a lot of things to chew on, which is what really good sci-fi does, I think.
Yeah, the closest it comes to giving you an idea about who Sam was, who the original Sam is that he, you know, he's been pining for his wife, right? He has this memory of his wife, and he's watching these calls on loop from his wife. And when he finally is able to make connection with Earth, he calls his home. And he hides his identity because he knows he's a clone at this point. But he's trying to figure out what is real. And he calls home, asks for his wife. She's been dead. She's been dead for a while now. And the person telling him this is his daughter, who is now 15.
Yeah.
Right. And I think she's like two or three. Like, she's very young in like the photos and stuff they have. And in the background, she, off camera, she talks to her dad, who you hear is voiced by Sam Rockwell, presumably the original Sam. So he's out, he's there, he's living his life, and has just, I don't know, pawned off his DNA. Does he get residuals? You don't know what the deal is. But he gave up, you know, probably pretty cheaply, which is also a great note on the way we interact with commercialization of so many things about our life. Is you give up so much cheaply to these companies, and look what they're doing with it.
Or he might not have even have known, you know, like the way I took it was like he did the 3 years there. They got his DNA and they just cloned him a bunch. You know, it's like the whole thing. What SAG is talking about now, it's like, oh, you can work for a day for these studios. And they were like, guess what? We've got your likeness to just use wherever now. We can just clone your likeness, essentially, and just use that in perpetuity and not have to pay you. And that's like seems like what's happened.
Yeah, it's a nice question that's kind of left open. And there is there's a exchange between Sam 1 and Gertie as Sam is kind of putting together his plan to get off the base. Because he knows he's dying. He wants to get out of here as quickly as possible. And Sam 1 asks Gertie, essentially his only friend that he's aware of, if Gertie would be okay. And Gertie says, of course, the new Sam and I will be back to our programming as soon as I finish rebooting. And original Sam says, Gertie, we're not programmed. We're people. Do you understand? But to Gertie, he's been seeing this program running on a loop for like 15 years or something. It's just, Sam is just an expression of a program and a function of this base. He's not any more real than Gertie is. And it's such a nice encapsulation of what Sam the clones are dealing with. They are people. They can't be treated as disposable pieces of a company's project. And you know, this whole movie hinges on Sam Rockwell's performance.
Yeah.
As far as an actor goes, a perfect person for the underrated podcast.
Yes.
I mean, this is a guy who I think a lot of people would recognize him. Probably a lot of people know his name. But he's not some of you think of when you think about a movie star.
Right. He's usually like a really great supporting character actor. He's not typically a lead like this.
And you know, he's done some stuff where he's the lead and he's always great because what he has and what he brings to this role especially is a relatability in very fucked up situations. Like he is very grounded as a person. No matter what the role is, where everything feels real, and he always has like, he's always able to play off a sense of humor in his roles that is believable. He's not like a slapstick guy. It's just, this is funny because it's supposed to be funny, or it's funny because it's kind of sad, or it's funny because it's weird, or it's funny because he's a prick. Like, he can do all these things. And it, I mean, the movie needs that because it is essentially one guy on screen for the vast majority of the movie, you hear a lot of other voices. Not even a lot of other voices. And most other faces you see are through cameras in the world. He is really the only full body that's present throughout the totality of the movie. And he has to play off himself. It's, you have to be able to look. Well, obviously he's not actually looking at himself, because that'd be a whole nother conversation to be having about, hey, did you know the movie Moon that was about clones has actual clones in it? That would be a real, real trippy. But you need that, because at times he has to both be expressing the same kind of workman's, like, well, we got a job to do kind of thing, balanced off of a guy who's like, don't you understand? It's all fucked. We're dying. We're being used. I got to get out of here. Like, somebody, if he was just losing his mind by himself, it would be a different movie than somebody else is there to both kind of like push back on him and then like to console him and to empathize with him. And in that empathy, realize that his own plight isn't very good.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off. Were you going to say anything else about that?
Well, I was going to say, it's just, it is a phenomenally underrated performance on top of the underrated movie. I don't know who else pulls this off. It is genuinely a movie that it's hard to imagine someone else doing it.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up the performance, because I had that. That was like one of my first notes, is that this is a powerhouse performance. Like, this is, honestly, I think you said it, like, one of the all-time great underrated performances, because, like, people who've seen it are like, oh yeah, he was really good in that, but, like, this is, like, incredible. Not only is he doing, like, one incredible role that, like, makes you relate to this person, he's doing two, but they are the same performance, but subtly different. Like, it's, like, the same guy, but one is 3 years down the line, so it's the same guy with the same anger issues, and one of them is mostly resolved from them, but there's still like little bits that, like, you can see there's moments where he has like an outburst, like, and it's so subtle, these two different performances. Like, one is more zenned out, but, and the fact that you're able to, like, they make it clear who's who, but, like, you would be able to tell just by his physicality, just by the intonation of his voice, which quote unquote Sam he's supposed to be at any given moment. So he's doing all that, he's doing like a Tom Hanks in Castaway level performance of just him being like this guy who's been alone for all these years and is kind of losing it and having to kind of just talk to himself, but he's having to play against himself. He's having to do a line, say a line, and then reverse, say the opposite line, or like probably do a whole, he'll do all the lines that Sam One has to do, then cut, you know, then go like on his other mark, remember, okay, how did I say this? How would I respond to this? And he's completely on every single time. And you mentioned it's hard to picture anyone else in this role. This role was pretty much specifically written with Sam Rockwell in mind, since it was such a small shoot. Like, it was made for about $5 million. It was made on the cheap. He was in other stuff. It wasn't until like the last minute that they were sure it was going to be him. And they basically, as a backup plan, had Patty Considine as like a backup, who, don't get me wrong,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, great, great actor. But, and I'm sure it would have been good still, but like, it would not have been this. It would not have been this all time, absolute incredible role. And just like you say, so, so, so underrated. Nobody talks about this. It didn't get any Oscar recognition or anything, because I think this kind of falls into one of those categories of movies that it came out at Sundance and people were like, wow, this is like really good. And then it gets like a limited release, a very limited release, like a New York, LA release, you know, one of those movies. And then maybe a couple more theaters in some very, very limited markets. And that's it. So that's why the point where, you know, the silver lining of that is, I hadn't seen a trailer or any, I'd only seen the poster for this. And I don't remember why, but I think I'd heard good word of mouth, people like, oh, Moon is good. And just one day, it was probably in like maybe 2010 or 2011, somewhere around there, I just click, turned on the Netflix, and I was blown away. And over the years, I think it's built a reputation where it's one of these movies where people who have seen it really like it, and people who like film a lot know about it, but not a lot of people do, which is why I had that preface at the beginning of the episode, like, no, go stop and watch this. This is a movie I've had in my docket to cover since the very, very beginning of doing Underrated. So I'm glad you were like, hey, I had an idea where I was like, well, if nobody ever wants to talk about it, and I'm just, you know, it was a dumb idea. I don't think it would have been very funny, but I was like, I'll do the episode playing against myself. Like, I'll just record myself.
That's pretty good, actually.
I think that's like a good idea, but in practice, I don't know how well it would have gone.
Just transcribe everything I say, and then just play it, and then just record it with yourself.
There you go.
I don't mind not getting any credit.
Derek McDuff with his co-host, Derek McDuff. But yeah, so, you know, since when I sent you the list of potential movies to cover, you went right, I guess we went a little bit back and forth, but you wanted to cover this one.
Well, because first I picked a movie that wasn't on the list. Yes. And even though I had looked at the list like 3 times, but then when you asked me, I was like, here's a movie that's not on the list, let's do this one.
I was like, well, but what made you want to pick this one? What drew you to it?
It's just, you know, what we talked about in the beginning. It's the kind of sci-fi that you don't get to see anymore. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we might say it has indie movie sensibilities, mm-hmm. right? It's very intimate. It is focused on what are my favorite aspects about science fiction is the way people who live in that world have to exist. Mm-hmm. You know, there's big science fiction that deals with big ideas, but the people involved with it are just dealing with the big ideas. They're not trying to figure out a way to live their lives. And even though it sort of isn't that, because he is trying to figure out, most of the movie is still about dealing with the reality of the situation. Mm-hmm. You know, he goes through Sam 1, even after the second Sam is awakened, he goes through a denial period and refuses to even see himself as a clone. He says, well, no, clearly that means I'm the original. He has no memories of anyone else before him. Now there's a clone here. So he must still be the original. Mm-hmm. He must still be going home. And you're dealing with very personal things. He's not trying to solve any world problems. There's not some giant beam that's destroying a city,
right?
Like, that's in so many sci-fi movies. There's always some beam that has to be stopped.
I fucking hate the sky beam trope so much.
It's too much.
We should have put that to bed in like 2009.
That's exactly when this movie came out. That's exactly why I want to talk about it, because the movies that made me fall in love with science fiction as movies, because I grew up reading sci-fi, and so I already love sci-fi, but was the stuff that felt more personal. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the space marines, and I love colonial marines landing on a colony and like, well, it's a bug hunt, and then they get torn to pieces, and it's more action oriented. But I also love the first Alien, because it is just a crew of people being like, what the hell is happening here? How do we just survive? And it spends a lot of time giving you a picture. It fills in a great picture about what their lives are like, right? These are blue collar people. Sam Rockwell's character, Sam, is a blue collar guy.
Yeah.
He does a job. Mm-hmm. He does a job. He's fulfilling a contract. He's just trying to get through it so he can make some money and go home.
Yeah.
And do right by his family. He has no idea how he is being used. And then when he's presented with the reality of it, he does all the things that we do every day in our own jobs when we're miserable or unhappy. We say, well, you know, this is what I got, or, well, it's not really my problem. See, I'm going to be okay. It's other people's problem. But the reality is it's everyone's problem.
Yeah.
Because they'll treat you like that. They'll treat the next person like that. And if you're unlucky, Sam, as a stand-in for all of humanity, they'll treat all of us like that forever, for as long as they can get away with it. And when I say they, you know, again, I'm talking about capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's definitely a lot of different critiques that you can label this movie with. but you can also ignore all that, because again, there's such a stellar performance about a person confronting an existential crisis that is so personal that you can't help but be sucked in.
Yeah, 100%. And like you say, it's a very small story. It's a very small world. And I really do. I'm also of the camp where I love just simple concept, small budget sci-fi films.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was reading an interview with Duncan Jones last night about somebody like asked him, like, oh, like, what would you have done differently if Moon wasn't your first film, like if you had a bigger budget, like if you're able to do this other stuff. And he was like, Moon kind of was always going to have a small budget. He's like, that's the kind of story that this is. That's this very intimate, tight-knit story. And he brought up a lot of the sci-fi films from the 70s and 80s that he loved that are just kind of very claustrophobic. It's a very performance-driven. And he's like, if I'm doing a different kind of movie, then he talked about Warcraft, which I think is a flawed but very interesting film, you know, that he did. And that movie obviously had a humongous budget. And he's like, for Warcraft, he's like, that's a huge, vast fantasy world. And I had to, like, with all these different races and peoples and cultures and people from other dimensions and all this stuff, that's a very different, like, and for that, it makes sense that you're spending hundreds of millions of dollars. It makes sense that you're spending $5 million on Moon. And I think that's something that maybe gets lost today is you understand the type of story that you're telling and understand, like, what resources you have to allocate to that kind of story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, he clearly has a great handle on those smaller scale things, because Mute is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I love Mute. I've watched it a few times. It's really good. It's a great noir film that plays with a lot of things. Great cast. But it has a very tight, intimate lens on this world, which I think is more enriching than when you try to be like, whoa, look at the scale of this. And, you know, I also found Warcraft to be flawed, but really enjoyable. And I think it probably isn't something that was meant to be brought to the screen in that way, but I appreciated that he had, like, true love and ambition for what he was going to try to do with it, because he brings that same energy to these smaller things. Source Code. Have you seen Source Code?
I have, yeah.
So he directed that as well.
Yeah.
And that's another tight sci-fi thriller, which I really liked. It's, you know, maybe it also is underrated, but it's a very solid sci-fi concept that we've seen in other things in different ways, but it's brought into it's done really well, and it's very enjoyable. But this kind of scale where you get to focus and you get to live in the reality with them is so much better for sci-fi. Because how many times you go away from a big sci-fi thing, you're like, I wish we spent more time on that planet.
Right.
Or we spent more time with those people. Or, like, was it the second Star Trek where they're on that really colorful, like, red world and it starts to
blow
into people? Mm-hmm. It's like that opening scene is like, this is amazing. It's all bright and colorful and, like, it's interesting and like, how much time are we going to spend here? And then we end up doing, like, it just gets darker and darker more. And you lose a lot of what you should be able to get with sci-fi, especially sci-fi that at scale is dealing with really interesting things, is do the interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Don't resort to the cliche stuff. Do the more interesting thing. Sci-fi is such a great framing convention to tell different stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're talking, like, one of the things, I'm just going to keep throwing out movies that I love that fit into this kind of framework. There's a 2014 movie called Comet, directed by Sam, I don't know if his last name is pronounced this way, so I apologize. He also wrote it, Sam Eshmael. It has Emmy Rossum and Justin Long in it, and it's really a romance, right? It's really a romantic story, but the way it's framed and presented, you could easily see it as a sci-fi movie. And I must have watched this movie like a dozen times. Like, it's so beautiful the way it's shot and edited and plays with parallel universes and the way it presents things out of order chronologically, and like it just does a lot of stuff, but because it dips into parallel universes and things like that, you could say it's a sci-fi movie pretty easily. But it's about the romantic relationship between the two leads, and it's just like, you can do that kind of stuff. Solaris that I mentioned earlier.
So which Solaris are you talking about, by the way?
I didn't see the original.
Okay, yeah, because I've only seen the Soderbergh one. Okay.
Same here, but okay. That's the one I love. Okay.
That's like, a great film.
I fell in love with that movie. And it's just like, it's a very quiet movie. Like, it has some big concepts, and it goes to some very dark places. But at the heart of it, you can't help but get sucked in by the grief and the love that George Clooney's character feels for this woman he's lost. And it's, again, another fantastic science fiction movie that is really about people dealing with the existential crises we all live with on a daily basis, presented through the lens of something earth-shattering, mind-blowing, you know, reality-bending. And it just is, it can do so much, and Moon does that too. And so all that long-winded BS it's just sad that made me try to make myself sound smart about movies. It's just to say that Moon succeeds because it's about Sam Bell and a reality that he didn't know he lived in, and what that means for him as a person.
Well, yeah, I think that you do know a lot about movies. That was very well said, I gotta say. So thank you. And yeah, I completely agree. I love the kind of things that are just like, they're barely sci-fi. Like, they're in a sci-fi world, and they're in that sci-fi world as a way to be like, okay, to handle this concept of like, we're gonna have somebody talk to themselves, like a future version of themselves. And because we're in this sci-fi world and it's set on the moon, and all, we're able to do these things, to play with these big heady concepts in a way that the genre allows for us to do. And I think that's one of the reasons I love genre fiction so much, is because it lets you play around with those things, particularly when it's like on such a small scale like this, where that's all that really matters. Is like, yeah, we've got the thing on the moon. You're not having to worry about like Ad Astra is a movie that I think has some interesting ideas, but it gets way too into, like, for me, like the headiness of like, oh, there's a little, like, the world building's cool, but it's like, well, then we have to go to Jupiter, and then we have to go to this, and then to this. And it's just like, if it was a little more simplified, a little more tight, I would have liked that movie a little more, I think.
That'll be one to talk about on a different episode of something.
It's a movie I respect a lot more than I like. I'll put it that way.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But yeah, like movies, like even like ones we've covered on the show before, like Snowpiercer. You know, I think that's a movie that's like sci-fi setting, but it's just so that you can address all these issues about capitalism and corporate greed and like levels of society, and put it in like a literalized way in a post-apocalyptic world where there's a train. That's the kind of, or like, it's not sci-fi, but a movie that I just saw, but I really, really like, which is Talk to Me, which that's something a lot of horror movies are able to do really well, is dealing with grief in a way that literalizes it, where it's like,
no spoilers, because it's high on my list to watch soon, so.
Check it out, let me know what you think, but yeah.
And the wife wants to watch it, so if I get spoiled, and I spoil it for her, and then next thing know, we're never speaking to you again.
I don't want you guys coming after me. I can handle you. I can't. Your wife, she's tough. In a good way. In a good way. In a way that I respect her.
I didn't care what you said about her. I was more concerned with you putting me so low as a threat. Scary.
You're very terrifying. You're like Carrie Elwes in Liar Liar. It's a claw. You're afraid of the claw.
Okay.
No, just kidding. Anyone knows that if I compare you to Cary Elwes, it's a term of endearment because he's the best. But
and also, I'm more like him from Saw.
Sure.
I'm very likely to end up chained in a base in a kill room somewhere.
And then you have a surprise. You come back as a surprise in like the 5th or 6th century.
Oh, okay.
I guess so.
I haven't gotten that far.
Yeah. So it's okay. I've gotten not far at all. I just know that. Anyway, though, the thing too that I was going to say is about how this movie uses that sci-fi concept in a way of like, yeah, he's talking to himself. He sees his future self. And then something you brought up earlier, he hears like the quote unquote, the real Sam Bell on Earth, the one who has got to actually go back and live his life and has been able to be Sam Bell for 15 years. He was able to go back to his wife who passed, and now he's with his daughter. And that for me really hit on like the kind of imposter syndrome thing of like, oh yeah, you're up here, you're doing all this stuff. And then there's like the real version of you down on Earth, the one that's like living your life and experiencing things, and you don't feel like you're the real you. There's another real you. And that might not be in the text or anything. That might just be me too much in anything. But that's something that I was really jiving with on this rewatch, was the whole imposter syndrome angle.
Yeah. I it's so rich, right? Mm-hmm. Because again, when you ground something, because it means we can all relate to it. It can resonate with everybody in so many different ways. It means it's ripe for different perspectives and takeaways. And that's 100% like a real thing that you can take from this film is dealing with, do you belong here? Is this really about you? Is this really for you? What life is for you? Like I start to spiral when I think about that stuff. So, but you have to watch this movie to really appreciate what intimate, well-framed directing and a beautiful acting performance can do for any movie, regardless of the subject matter or the genre or anything like that, because it is a masterclass in both directing, writing, acting, score, cinematography, because it all speaks to the truth of the film, and that truth is whatever you can take from it. The film gives it to you. Whatever you're looking for to take from it, the film is like, yeah, this is here. Take it. You want that? Imposter syndrome? We got that. Capitalism? You want that? Sure, here. A man dealing with his identity or his imminent demise and our mortality. Here, we got that in spades. You want it? Watch this. It's just, it's why I rewatch it. I don't rewatch a lot of movies, but Moon is one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one that I love. It's one of my favorite movies, and I hadn't rewatched it in years, definitely not since COVID. So, like I said, that it hit me differently this time for that reason. But great cinema like that they won't be hyper-specific. Like, they won't try to hit only this thing. Or even if they do, people who aren't exactly the bullseye can still take other things from it. Like, the one I like to bring up is Turning Red, which is a movie that is about a 12-year-old Canadian Asian growing up and turning into a giant red panda. That's not something that I can relate to, but I was alive. I was also a middle schooler in 2002 with a very overprotective mom. So I'm still getting some of the vibes of this movie, and some things that may appear at first, very singular are actually universal and are not like excluding anyone. It's just like, oh, wow, you can take this imposter syndrome from this thing. You can take, whatever Sam is going through whatever you're going through in your own life, you can look at Sam's experience in this movie, this isolation, this identity crisis, this growing as a person, having to literally talk to and reflect upon his past self in real time. There's so many different things you can draw upon from whatever you're going on in your own life and bring it to this film.
Yes, preach, give it to me. Yum, yum. I want it. Yeah, it's you know, it's really easy to project stuff mm-hmm. onto a film or any kind of work of fiction or art, but really good art gives it to you. You don't have to project anything. It's right there. Like you said, like, you know, I haven't seen Turning Red, but who I know have seen it have all been, and I've talked to about it, have all been women, and you know, they relate to it in a lot of ways for I guess what are clear reasons, having not seen it, but you know, being a young girl, coming of age, dealing with the different aspects about maturing as a woman in society and in your social groups and in your family and the heritages of women in different cultures. But you found something like, I would not have imagined that was going to be the movie you chose to make your point, right? Because I haven't seen it. So the only view I've had was from these other people telling me what they pulled from it. But also what I have heard about the movie, I can clear, like what you said, I can clearly hear coming from the movie, and that's from a secondhand description. And then hearing you describe it, it's like, that's what good film does. It starts a dialogue and is open to discussing whatever you want to discuss.
Exactly. And that's why we record podcasts on movies, folks, so that we can have dialogues and great discussions on these films.
It's great to have the conversations in the shower by yourself. Isn't it better when it's two friends in the shower recording a podcast together?
Exactly. You know, I'm surprised that we're not getting more echo in here and that we're not getting the water coming in on the recording. I'll take care of that in post, I guess.
Yeah, I think it helps that we're both wearing like foam. We're wearing a lot of foam floaties.
And, I've got that big yellow jumpsuit that like he calls the radioactive tampon on right now.
Yeah, I wish you told me we're allowed to wear clothes.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry it slipped my mind, you know. I just thought this was stylish.
Oh, yeah, no, you look great.
Thank you.
You look great wet. Yeah.
That's what I hear. That's what I hear.
I'd love for you to share that same compliment to me on audio, please.
David, you look great wet.
And clip, save.
Now it's out there for everyone to hear.
And the rest of this podcast won't go out at all.
Yeah.
It's just that clip when I sue you.
But on that note, is there anything else you want to bring up while we're still here in the shower together on this movie?
Well, I mean, there's things I want to bring up in the shower, but but about the movie, no, just it's one of the few movies, like, I know I've done other episodes, but this is a movie I would genuinely advocate for being worth anybody's time. And it's gonna be a sad I guess it is a little bit sad. It's gonna be a sad recommendation, but also maybe an appropriate one. It's a great movie to watch by yourself.
Yeah, I don't think I've watched this with anybody else. I think every time I've watched it, I've watched it alone, and it's a good lonely watch, to be honest.
It's great to watch with someone else because you're gonna have that conversation, but it's interesting to watch it alone and have that kind of like parallel experience to Sam's loneliness.
Right.
And like, you know, you really start to feel like a voyeur. It gives you that feeling of the voyeurism of really being there. You know, maybe that's why it spoke to me in terms of like being grounded, because I was just like, you're drawn in because it is so intimate and you have that kind of fascination that comes with seeing something and maybe you're not supposed to be seeing. Not in like a pervy way. I know that's my brand on here, but
like, you talk about the scene where Sam Bell's in the shower and you see his butt, right?
I was trying to avoid it. There's my subtle nod was us being in the shower, but yeah, you've sold me out.
Yeah.
But no, just go watch it. Please go watch it. Underrated.
Yeah, definitely. And I just have like one more thing I wanted to ask you is, have you heard of, because you mentioned Moon, we also talked about Moon, you mentioned Mute. Have you heard of, there's like a end of the trilogy. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, the graphic novel.
The graphic novel, yeah, which I saw him, Duncan Jones, I saw him speak for a little bit at Comic-Con. It's called Maddie, or Maddie Once Upon a Time in the Future, which he originally like had envisioned as a movie, but I guess he hasn't been able to get to the funding for it. So he just did it as a graphic novel with hope so that will secure the rights to it. Because apparently it's a much bigger project than Moon or Mutes. So I would really love to see the because it's not really a trilogy because they're separate stories, but they're all kind of in the same world. The way he describes it was it's kind of like the Three Colors trilogy. So I'd love to see that. Do you know? Have you any familiarity with that?
I haven't. No, I haven't read it. It would be great. I would love to see. It's the kind he has built very quietly, a very rich world that you can set all kinds of stories in and never have them interconnected, other than maybe something in the background to let you know it's the same world. Because Mute is so tonally different in a lot of ways. But it's also like a great intimate story.
Yeah, so totally. And I, because you've been in my D&D campaigns. You know that I love just like, oh, subtly this is actually connected to this thing, and there's only one little hint that's going to connect it. You know, I kind of my jam. You know, and that's why I actually kind of that's my favorite thing about the Marvel movies, especially like I went back recently, rewatched a lot of Phase One stuff, and there's a lot of like great little. Like hints before anybody actually starts crossing over. That's like, oh, this is all connected, and I love that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you for coming on. Is there anything you want to pitch or mention at all?
I feel like the way you said that means I should have something, but
no, it's
I work I usually... I work in HR. I don't know if I have anything worthwhile to pitch to someone.
Which is, I bring it up. It's on the next episode. I already recorded it, but it's nice that I've recorded a couple episodes with people who are incredibly knowledgeable about movies who aren't regular podcast people, and it's just like, cool. You guys don't have a podcast or anything. You're just on here to talk to me. I love it.
Well, also, I definitely couldn't promote anything. I guess technically, I shouldn't be promoting Moon because you want to be in solidarity with the striking writers and actors and all the work they do, and beyond them, labor succeeds through solidarity.
Exactly, which is why I feel like that. There's been a lot of talk about like, oh, is movie reviews or is movie criticism promotion, and I'm definitely on the side of that it's not, but it's definitely nice to also be like able to kind of sidestep that and be like, these are all everything we talk about underrated is older projects, so I'm not out here pushing anything, any new movies or anything like that, which is nice because obviously as a person who has been both an actor and a writer in a much less successful sense than anyone in these unions, I obviously support them wholeheartedly and try to bring that up whenever I can on the show.
Yeah. Live better, work union.
Absolutely. So hopefully, the corporate fat cats, the people who are wanting to turn all the actors and writers into Sam Bells to just get replaced every three years and by AI or whatever. Hopefully they lose soon. So,
get their asses.
But with that, I guess I'll just end by saying thank you, everyone, for listening. I know that there have been some changes to the podcast recently, so thank you all for sticking by.
Wait.
Yes.
Speaking of changes.
Mm-hmm. Changes. That's his dad. Sorry.
Yes, that's his dad, David Bowie. I thought it was worth mentioning, but I thought he could stand on his own merits now, right? He's an accomplished writer and director. I have a new tagline pitch for you.
Let me hear it.
You've been underrated.
All right, I'll try. Let's see. I'm going to put it at the end of we'll do it as a trial run at the end of this. I'm going to do my whole spiel and then I'll throw it in there. We'll see how it goes.
All right. Give it to me.
All right. So, thank you everyone for listening. If you want to find out anything more, go to underratedmoviepodcast.com. That's got links to all of our socials. It's got our link to our new Patreon. We just started a new Patreon where we're going to be releasing a episode every month of my new exclusive patron podcast called Underdogs, which is going to be about sports movies. The first episode is going to be out on October 15th. That's going to be on whichever wins the initial poll, which is going to be on a baseball movie. I'm going to be having Craig from the podcast, a person who has forgotten more about baseball than I will ever know, on to talk about one of those baseball movies with me. So I'm very excited for that. So if you want to hear about that, you can sign up at our Patreon for at least $3. And there's even a $1 option if you want to just sign up just be a patron. That's always appreciated. But honestly, your listens are thanks enough for me by far. So thank you, everyone, and you've been underrated.